This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Kia ora everybody. Welcome back. This is episode 5 of Eco Agenda. I'm Hazel.
I'm Martine.
And I'm Jamina.
Today we're going to be talking about the history of reproductive rights that women back in the day had to go through, tying it through to our personal experiences today. I want to really focus on the history of reproductive rights. Back in the day, women had to go through their husbands to be able to access anything when it came to their reproductive organs, because back then you weren't allowed anything. Like, any access it had to be through your husbands to prove it before you got access to
and
it.
And what do you mean by access? They had to come with you? They had to sign something?
Everything. Everything. They had to, like, if you anything was wrong with you, they had to organise a doctor's appointment for you, come to the doctor's appointment, sit through the doctor's appointment.
Well, then they should be able to understand us. And if they were sitting there with us back in the day.
Yeah. And then, like, everything was signed off. And then they started the rise of birth control. Birth control had to be signed off by husbands, but husbands obviously didn't want their woman on birth control because they want children. Because that's the whole reason why women exist. Yeah.
Wow.
I want to know your guys' opinions on what you think of what life was back then, of actually having women not have access to their own rights and having to go through husbands, because that's so different to what we have today.
I think it's so weird. Like, it doesn't surprise me, but I think it's weird.
Mm.
I understand that we didn't have much control or, like, autonomy to our own bodies. Like, I understand that that's what happened. But I still find it weird that men had to sit in on everything.
This was also really interesting to find out about women not having rights to their own reproductive health care, because they also had the conversation of periods being too taboo. Men didn't want to find out about it. Men didn't want to know about it. But all of a sudden, the husbands are at the doctor's appointment, signing off on our rights, but they don't want to talk about the actual things that happened to us. I think that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Why they had to split those parts of, I don't know, our lives.
Like, yeah.
Periods were too gross to talk about, but then, oh, you have to have a baby for me.
I think it raises a really good point of how, you know, there's that stereotype or there's that discourse around men not wanting to know and men being uneducated on the woman's body. But there was a period of time where they sat in and they listened to, like, medical conversations about a woman's body. Like, there's a real conflict there, is there not? I think that's really interesting.
Mm. The article that I found that talked about periods being too taboo was with Pākehā Women's Experiences from 1930s to 1970s. From 1960s to 1980s, that's when there was a drastic rise of birth control, the abortion laws being legalized. And so I think in a way, men actually realized, being like, if we don't even want to talk about periods, then why are we so deeply involved of going to their pap smears?
Yeah.
Like, take a step back. Let's actually give women their full access to what they deserve.
Well, because that was the second wave feminism movement. That was the women's liberation movement, which they really rebutted against workplace discrimination. And, you know, that's when contraception and abortion was now talked about.
It's really interesting if you look at first wave feminism started with the rise of women's right to vote. That was our first wave of feminism. That time period, just before the wars, was women getting right to vote, women finally understanding their place in society. Then it dies down and women go into work fields during the Second World War because the men were all at war. Then when the men came back from war, that's when women were like, why are you taking our jobs? And that's when the rise of second wave feminism started. And as you said, fight for workplace rights, fight for our own anatomy and our body rights. That's when abortion laws came in, all of that beautiful stuff. And now we're moving into third wave feminism from 2010-ish to now, which is still really new because it's only been, like, what, 15 years. The third wave feminism is really interesting to think about because we're actually going backwards. Like, we had our first wave feminism that was like, yes, women in power, we got this. Second wave, we're like, yes, women fighting for their rights. Now we're in third wave feminism, and it's all of a sudden we've gone into the negatives. Why have we gone that way?
Interesting that that's happening too in the rise of conservatism in general. Like,
yeah.
Well, I mean, we can see it very prominent in the Roe v. Wade laws that have been overturned in the US in 2020.
And the Roe v. Wade, for those who don't know, is a constitutional right to abortion, and that was overturned by the Supreme Court in 2022. So that basically says that women in America do not have that right to an abortion if they need one.
There's this case in Georgia of this lady called Adriana Smith. I want to shine light on her case because I think it's really important and actually reflects on how heartbreaking this is for women. She was really sick and she went to the doctors and they were like, oh, no, you're just like, take some pain medication. And she went home and then she ended up having an underlying brain condition, which they couldn't find. She was 13 weeks pregnant at this point.
Oh.
And when she went to the hospital, she was declared brain dead. Due to the abortion laws, because she was over 10 weeks pregnant, she had to stay alive for the baby. The baby had rights over her. So they kept her alive through machines and everything, even though she was brain dead, and kept the baby functioning to a certain extent up until they could deliver the baby via C-section at the safe, 38 weeks to 40 weeks. So she had to stay alive, technically, for 7 more months. And she did, and they kept her alive, and the parents could do nothing, and the healthcare system in the States doesn't pay for things like that, so the family pay to keep their daughter alive for their grandchild to be born.
And then what happened after the baby was delivered?
The baby was delivered prematurely, obviously, because the mother is dying. Like, the body cannot stay alive for that long, even with machines. The baby was born at 800 grams and was rushed into intensive care. And then that's when they could turn off the machine and Adriana could pass away peacefully. These laws are actually breaking women and losing their rights to have a fulfilling life. Adriana and her baby could have passed away peacefully together, but due to the laws, the parents had to suffer. Her husband had to suffer. Her older children had to suffer to watch their mum pass away in a
to be kept
horrible.
Alive and yeah. then killed later.
Barely. That's yeah. awful. And and like the financial stress that would have put as well, because it wasn't getting paid for, and it's like almost for what?
Yeah.
Like that poor baby.
For that baby to grow up without a mum.
I really hope that the US lead their way to progress the way New Zealand has, because there's nothing worse than seeing women having to fight so hard for something
for it to just be overturned. I feel like before Roe v. Wade was initially put into place in, was it 1970-something, you know, the whole world saw the pain and suffering for women having to carry children to birth under circumstances that weren't great and that was harmful to the mother. Like, that, we already saw that, and that's why Roe v. Wade was first put in place. And then for that to get stripped back again, it's just so unprogressive, and I really hope that America can fix this, because in what world, in what circumstance, in what experience should a fetus have more rights than a fully grown woman or even a 13-year-old girl? It's frankly disgusting. It's absolutely disgusting. We work so hard as women to be fought as equal, and then for something so big that completely changes our life. Giving birth is a life-altering moment. For us to not be in control of that is awful.
You hear all these horror stories from the 1950s of illegal abortions, women dying because they couldn't think of anything worse than having a baby at the time. That's the reason why we had the abortion laws coming into place in 1970s. So why, out of all the evidence that we have, this is why history is so important. Why is this being brushed underneath the rug?
It's because people still don't respect women. The people who are in power, the majority of them, still don't respect women, because otherwise things like this wouldn't happen. Roe v. Wade wouldn't get overturned.
I really want to take this time to acknowledge that personally I have not been through an abortion myself or gone through an experience like this, but this is still a space for other people to listen who have experienced this, that this is a safe space and we are fighting alongside you.
Yeah. Yep. We see you and we have no idea what it's like, but we see you, we hear you, and we will fight together for this.
If you decide to or need to have an abortion because of certain circumstances, we want you to be able to do it in a safe environment.
Yeah, not everyone has privilege to just fall pregnant and be able to carry through with this baby.
Mm-hmm.
Some people are living paycheck to paycheck. Some people have mental health problems. Some people have physical health problems. There's so many reasons why women would not be in the right circumstance to give birth, and I think it should always be our choice.
I really want to highlight and move into our own personal experiences when it comes to understanding periods and understanding cycles. For me, I got my period when I was 12-ish, kind of. And it was literally the worst experience of my life. Like, I hated it. I was like, this is horrible. I don't want this. Why do I have to deal with this? And my mum was so excited. She's like, oh my goodness, you're a woman. This is it. And I was like, this is so overwhelming. Bless my mother, because she does talk very openly about it. So I wasn't nervous. It was just like, there is a lot. Yeah. Like, this has just opened a whole new world for me that I need to learn to understand. And I have to learn it. Otherwise, my life's going to fall apart, because it felt like my life was falling apart. And then so I had terrible cramps, a really bad period the first time I ever got one. The second time I got it was, again, a horrible experience. I was so nauseous, and it lasted for like a week and a half. And then from there, my periods became extremely irregular, super light, and now that's how they are today. And I still don't understand it. Yeah. Makes no sense to me. And when I got on birth control, that's when it also affected my menstrual cycle. But nobody educates you onto why your menstrual cycle is so important and how putting different hormones into your body can affect it. And I know, Hazel, you've had this experience as well of learning about your menstrual cycle through social media at the age of like 16 to 18.
Yeah, I didn't even know that we had different like phases, like our luteal phase and our, is it follicular phase, until last year. And I'm 20. Like, that's too late. I should have known this earlier. And I think that leads on really nicely into like conversations that we have at school and sex education. And there's no urgency to teach kids that anymore. And I actually think that's really dangerous.
I remember we Googled this, what was it, Monday? I was so surprised to find out that sexual education is only required from year 1 to year 10. And I think that's great. I think that I'm so happy that we have that. But it's from year 11 to year 13, which is when you really need to know about all of it, because you're about to go into adulthood.
I would argue that year 10 and onwards is when we really need it most, not year 1 to 10. Like, I went to a religious primary school and intermediate, so I didn't really get taught anything. I do have this one memory from when we all sat around in a circle, and you know those toilet bags that zip up and open like a book, and they've got like the clear film where you put your products in and you zip it up?
Oh, yeah.
So my teacher had put open pads and tampons in there, but under the film. So we went around passing around this open toilet bag, and we could touch the pads and the tampons through the film. That's my experience of education, sexual education. Like, we weren't even allowed to touch the real damn thing. It had to be behind a film.
That's making them look so mythical. Like,
yeah. I remember all the boys, like, touch, move on. And I'm being like, this is all they know about periods is what the products look like.
I got my period when I was, like, 10. And
wow, that's really young.
Yeah, I know. I was quite young. And I remember, I honestly, I don't think my mom was prepared for it either. Because I remember she was at work that day. And I just, like, went to the toilet and I was like, this doesn't look like poo.
That's actually such a valid response. I'm like, oh my God, I'm dying.
I was like embarrassed for a second because I was like, oh, no way, I just pooed my pants on my good old age of 10. And I was like, no, wait, no. I don't think it is. And I was living with my great aunties at the time, and I just called one of them because I was like, I have blood. Like, I knew about periods by then, but I didn't really know much about it.
Yeah.
So I was just like, I think I'm bleeding. I think I don't know, period. And then, like, we didn't have pads at home at the time. I don't think my mom was prepared for it, like I said. And so I think someone ended up buying pads for me anyway, but my great aunt was just like, just wear another set of underwear over your current one. And I was like, oh, okay. And it was like, I think I kind of set a trend where I knew about it. I talked about it with my mom on a very basic level.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't think I really, like what you were saying about, like, the phases and stuff, I fully didn't know about it. And I just, like, I was like, okay, well, all I know is I go my period. Mine was quite irregular. I think it's kind of becoming more regular now. So it's like, there's more of a pattern, but I never really kept up with it because for years it was just like, sometimes I'll have it, like, after a few months, sometimes I'll have it, like, a bit early, and it's just, like, it was just really erratic. And then every time, like, I would go to the doctor for it, they were like, oh, well, it's because you're young. You're young, and you just have to wait for it to become regular. And I didn't really know if that was valid or not.
I absolutely love that you said that the doctors were like, you're just young. Your body's going to grow up and mature, and you'll get regular period. No.
They want to give you an explanation, and because the world runs on time clocks and structure, you know, oh, your body will phase out of it. Your body will learn what every 28 days looks like. No, it won't.
It's kind of...
No, it doesn't. Yeah. That's not how it works. It's not like your morning poo, Ben. We don't work. That might come at 8 a.m. every day, but our periods don't come every, you know?
And she doesn't give you a warning. It's not like you feel like you're going to get your period. Sometimes you do. Sometimes you don't. Sometimes you get a period.
Some cycles I do. Some cycles it just happens. I'm like, oh, okay. But yeah. I think kind of thinking of it, like the doctors being like, oh, it's just because you're young. I think part of it is also because, like, you know, now knowing that our bodies all work so differently, it's kind of hard to pinpoint like a particular reason, right? And that's why it's so much harder for people to find out what's wrong. Because they're not, at least in my experience anyway, they weren't doing any close inspections. It was pretty much just me having to, like, note down my cycles, like, and how long it was, and then giving that to them and then being like, that's kind of all they had to work with. And because we all have such different bodies, it's hard to figure out what particularly is wrong, right?
Yeah. I had a somewhat interesting conversation when it came to getting my period, actually learning what a period was. I remember we were in primary school. I was year five, so it was the year five and year six girls. We sat in a bloody circle, and you had our 40-year-old teachers with their presentation and their whiteboards, and they were sitting there being like, okay, we're going to show you what a period is. And like, my mum had told me before what a period is, but like, very basic information. She's like, we'll talk about it more, because she's like, I know you're going to be talking about it in school. I remember sitting there and they were talking about like what a period is, and all they said was you're going to be bleeding from your private areas and it happens roughly once a month. That's kind of it. And then it just turned into a whole gossip session for like a whole week. Oh my goodness, this girl got her period at the age of 10.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Can you believe that? And then you've got like, oh, but I haven't started mine, but my best friend has. Like, I can't believe that this is happening. Do I need to fake my period? Am I behind or am I ahead? Am I slow? I don't know what's going on. And I was so confused. And so I went to my mum that night and my cousin was over. My cousin is 13 years older than me. I remember sitting down and I'm like, I'm so confused. Like, they just, mum gave me more information than the bloody school did. Am I not supposed to be educated by them? Like, I was so lost. And that's when my cousin told me everything. She's like, what a period actually is, everything. Like, she told me all the nitty gritty details. And I think that's so important to know. Yeah. Because then you actually understand why there's different textures, there's different colours, there's different phases. What about spotting? What about heavy? What about light? And that's when I was so eye-opened to actually what a period is. So when I got mine, I was still overwhelmed. There was nothing that was going to change that about me. But I was a little bit more understanding as into, like, actually what is this? Like, it's not like when you cut yourself and you're bleeding. It's not the same thing.
No.
Like, this is...
No, but that's what they made it out to be.
That's what they made it out to be, is that you cut, like, you're just going to cut a hole in your vagina and you're going to bleed out of there once a month. Yeah. Like, that's what it sounded like.
Yeah.
Actually, I find it so nice and interesting that your family was so open about it, like, about talking, like, telling you the informative side of it, because I feel like that just gives a sense of relief. And it kind of makes you think of, like, the general taboo that, like, you know, they're really vague about it, and they're really vague and careful about it for a reason in schools, right? Because I'm thinking, like, do you guys know that movie Turning Red that Disney released a few years ago? It's a beautiful coming-of-age movie, and it's, like, I felt so seen into it because she was like a fangirling, like, Asian immigrant, and I was like, oh, hell yeah, that's so real.
That's you, boo!
I'm like, that's my girl! But also, it was just so beautiful. It was like a love letter to childhood, but I remember it didn't do as well as a lot of other Disney films did, and it's because people decided to focus on the fact that it was like an allegory for periods, and puberty and stuff, and then people were like, oh, why are you teaching kids about this? And it's like, why is this still a taboo? It's so important. Like, people don't know anything because we're being vague on purpose, because for some reason it's so socially unacceptable to even mention them.
Yeah, why aren't we teaching kids about that? I think that's why we need to see more representation of what happens with a woman's body, like, in the media and stuff. Because, you know, if TV shows, even kids' TV shows, talked about, you know, or, like, normalized women getting periods or, like, body hair as much as the main female protagonist got a boyfriend, then maybe it wouldn't be so taboo in the world that we live in.
Mm.
Maybe society wouldn't shame us for the blood and, you know, all these what's supposed to be unnatural things. Maybe that'd be seen more natural if there was more representation within kids' TV shows and just normal TV shows.
I think this ties in really nicely to the fact of scaremongering around our own bodies. Why are we so afraid about things that we should have natural access to? We should naturally be able to talk about it.
In my life, I have a lot of older women around me that struggled to get pregnant. So I feel quite nervous about infertility. And I think that's also online as well. There's all this talk about birth control can make you infertile. Grapefruit makes you more fertile. Abortions make you less fertile. All this stuff. And it's just like, shut up. I don't know.
Again, it's like the thing with different bodies. Like, maybe that happened to cause some kind of fertility issue with some other person, but it's like, it's hard to tell because, and then you're just kind of sitting there in fear, like, oh, what should I and shouldn't I do? That's scary.
Yeah, like, have they ever taken a Psych 101 paper? Like, correlation and causation, people, very different.
Literally, the only thing I'm, like, really scared about right now is birth control, which you kind of have to be scared about anyway.
I think that's really important, actually, to be scared about birth control. I'm scared about birth control, and I'm on birth control.
Well, everyone's had such different experiences. Like 90% of my friends are on birth control, and they're on, like, a wide range from the rod to one of the types of pills, and everyone's had really different experiences. And sorry, there's a lot of scaremongering there as well. Oh, don't go on that. That made me depressed the entire time. And it's just like, I don't want to be depressed.
Exactly. You don't want to risk that. Yeah.
But
yeah.
I also don't want to be pregnant.
Yeah.
Oh my exactly. God.
When I was deciding, I went on the pill when I was 16. It made me so sad. I was so sad. I hated the world. I hated my life. It was a terrible time. And I was like, okay, Maybe it's because I just went through a fresh breakup. Maybe that's why I'm sad. Maybe it's just like coming of age and that's why I'm sad. And I was like, okay, let me go off of birth control. As soon as I went off of it, literally a week later, all of a sudden I'm happy again. And that made me really scared to go on any other... I was like, I'm definitely not going on the pill again. But when I started dating my boyfriend, him and I were like, okay, we need to figure out a form of birth control. What are we feeling? We talked about it. We went through my options. We went through his options. And the best option that we found was either the IUD, which I was terrified of because I had horror stories of people. And then the rod, which is the one that I currently have, I talked to my mum for like, it was a solid 3 months of trying to organize something and discuss it because I was so petrified of the side effects, as in infertility being a major side effect. And I think it's so important to highlight this form of scaremongering around things related to women's bodies because, yes, we can bring awareness to it, but don't bring fear onto it.
Yeah, because what happens to you won't happen to someone else. Let's normalize these conversations. Talk to your friends, talk to your family, talk to whoever will listen about what you experience as a woman, you know, your cycles, what happens before and after. You know, there's no shame. The only way we can destigmatize periods and women's bodies is to just start talking about them. You know, be upfront. Be like, oh, I'm so premenstrual. Oh, I've got such bad period cramps.
Be loud and be proud about your periods.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, if the world wants babies, this is what happens because of babies. There's more to a woman's reproductive system than just the end result of a child.
Mm.
We also want to talk about the periods. We also want to talk about menopause. We also want to talk about sex and what that's like for us as women. You know, we want to talk about birth control. There's so many things that factor in to a woman's life, to womanhood, to a woman's female experience. But sometimes it feels like all we're allowed to talk about is babies. But there's more to that. We are more than the product of a child that we give the world.
Tying everything in from our scaremongering to our personal experiences about periods all the way back to the 1920s, we today are creating history, which is so beautiful to see,
yeah,
of talking about periods, bringing light to it, having this accessible to women and anyone that wants to listen so they can understand that they're not alone. This is a safe space. This is a safe space for them. Thank you so much for joining us on episode 5 of Equal Gender, and we can't wait for you guys to listen to next week's episode. Thank you. Bye.
See you next week.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.